Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art Beats and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, everybody, it is Thursday, March 14th, 2024, and it is indeed a heck of a morning. We are live once again on the MMA Fighting Twitter space. You can hear the show in its entirety shortly thereafter on the MMA Fighting Podcasting Network. What's going on, everybody? I missed you all. I am Mike Heck. Welcome back to the program. It's been a while since we spoke like this. We talked for like an hour on Saturday, just kind of like a pop-in, but we haven't actually done a show that started on Twitter and went to the podcast network in well over a week. I think last Tuesday was the last time we had done this, because last week was just absolutely bananas with the travel and Joshua Ngannou on Friday, UFC 299 on Saturday. There was just so much going on that there's just no possible time frame, no way we could have actually made it work. So glad to be back. Couldn't do Tuesday. I got to tell you, last weekend clobbered me in a number of ways. Obviously with travel and talking so much and just all the work, really. Just fatigue, honestly. And then like my voice is just cooked if you listen on to the next one on Sunday. So I was already dealing with that. And then by the time I flew home Sunday night, I was just feeling rotten. And when I woke up Monday morning, it just got worse. Tuesday was even worse. Just had nothing, absolutely nothing. Was basically in bed for 2 days. It was pretty rough, but just kind of took a lot of antibiotics and a lot of medicine, and we battled through. And now I still sound a little weaselly, but we fight through. I am now a functioning human being, and that's good. So now we can talk about all the stuff that we didn't get a chance to talk about on Tuesday, like what happened on Friday night. Anthony Joshua just blistering Francis Ngannou. That was tough to watch. It's going to be interesting to see where Francis goes from here. Just was not... I don't think Joshua winning was a surprise. He was probably not as big of a favorite as he should have been. But to see him just go out and cold Ngannou like that, I just didn't expect that, especially so early in the fight. So that was like the tale of like, oof, this is a rough start to the weekend if you're an MMA fan. And then we fast forward to Saturday, and it was like a whole different ballgame. Great card, 299 delivered in so many ways. We started off the main card with Petr Yan, just reminding people that he's still very good at this fist fighting thing. We had the incredible comeback win from Jack Della Maddalena against Gilbert Burns in a fight he was clearly losing, about to lose 30-27 on two of the scorecards. Gets out of a tough position, lands the knee from hell, just obliterates Gilbert Burns, knocks him dead, and huge win for JDM. And then he calls out Shavkat Rakhmonov, which... Gangster-ass move right there from Jackie Three Names. Then we got the debut of Michael Venom Page. I mean, I've never seen a guy silence Kevin Holland before in a fist fight, and boy, did he do that. That was unbelievable. Was it the fight of the year? No. Was it the worst fight of all time? No. I've seen both of those takes for some reason, but it was right in the middle. He hit Kevin Holland really hard, a whole bunch. Kevin had nothing for him, completely frazzled him, and pretty solid debut for Michael Venom Page. Came out to the Undertaker theme, which I thought was pretty cool. And then we get to the co-main event. Dustin Poirier versus Benoit Saint-Denis. This is my main event. This is the fight I was looking forward to the most, even more so than the main event. And boy, did this fight deliver everything I had hoped for. Benoit Saint-Denis just going in there like a freaking grizzly bear. Dustin Poirier weathering the storm, gets himself in some trouble. I thought for a second Benoit Saint-Denis was going to rip Dustin Poirier's arm off. Poirier survives the first round. Round two, these guys start battling. Poirier's jumping gillies left and right. Hits BSD with the big shot, jumps a gilly again, and we're like, oh my God, what are you doing? Stop jumping gilly. They get separation, and then Poirier just colds Benoit Saint-Denis, and what a moment that was for the Diamond, reminding people just who the hell that man is. And everything he's done since has just been absolutely unbelievable. From the post-fight interview, the media scrum after, his interview with Ariel in the MMA Hour, just A-plus stuff from Dustin Poirier. Now the big question is, did he just jump everybody? Is timing going to be his best friend? Is availability going to be his best friend? Will he be getting a title shot off of this win? If Islam Makhachev really wants to fight in June, I'll tell you, Dustin Poirier is in the freaking driver's seat right now with all the goodwill and momentum he has right now since Saturday night. I don't think anyone's going to complain if Dustin Poirier gets his last title shot in June against Islam Makhachev. But what a freaking performance. Cash two bets at once. Cash the, well, at least the parlay fodder continued by 2 seconds. The over 1.5 hits. And the dog bet on Dustin Poirier hits as well. And then we get to the main event. Sean O'Malley just dominates Marlon Vera. Very one-sided. Vera did have his moments. I saw some people on Twitter, and I think they're just trolling. And I don't mean this to be disrespectful to Sean O'Malley at all. I saw somebody on Twitter, and it got a lot of traction, saying that this is the greatest title defense of all time in the UFC. I had to snicker at it, and then I realized that Twitter is just really dumb sometimes. And the blue check marks, when used properly, are great. But when you have takes like this, and they know what they're trying to do, somehow they're making a bunch of money off of it. Clearly, this is not the greatest title defense of all time. Far from it. But it was really, really good. Like, Volkanovski, when I saw the tweet, I was like, man, Volkanovski has like three that were better than this. Shevchenko has like two or three that were better than this. And that was just like off the top of my head. But this is really good. Like, this is a one-sided beating from Sean O'Malley. It was a near-perfect game. I'm not going to call it a perfect game because Vera did land some shots. He did land a vicious body shot at the end of the fight. But this was like, O'Malley took a no-hitter into the ninth, and then he gave up an infield single. So this is pretty damn good for Sean O'Malley. A lot of people were wondering, like, could Sean go out there for 25 minutes and have as close to a perfect fight as there could be? And that's what happened. I actually thought Sean was going to win by decision. I certainly didn't think it would be that one-sided. Marlon didn't do a whole bunch, but I think a lot of that was due to Sean switching stances, the movements, all the different strikes, the shots to the body, the shots up top. That knee that Marlon Vera ate was unbelievable. And it's just a great performance against a low-ranked guy. But what he did to Marlon Vera was really impressive. Like, you've seen Marlon Vera hit 300 times in a fight by Rob Font. You've seen Marlon Vera hit and go to wars with a lot of people, and he doesn't wear it at all. He looked like a different human being after this fight. And that was very, very impressive. Marlon Vera cannot be finished. It's impossible. No one can finish this man. So kudos to his grit and toughness. But Sean O'Malley gets it done. Calls out Ilya Topuria. Told you guys that was going to happen. I knew he was going to do it. Wrote it in print. That's what he's going to do. Went over. Not very well at all. Some people think it's a great idea. I hate it. You already know how I stand on this. I've heard from both sides of the camp, like, Mike, this is awful. And I've also heard of, Mike, you got to strike while the iron's hot. No, you don't. You don't. Topuria has guys to fight. You can run it back with Volkanovski. I'm okay with that. There's Mavzarov Loyev. There's Brian Ortega. There's other guys Ilya could fight. And then Sean O'Malley has Merab right there. And that's a pretty big fight right now. Merab is over. People want to see it. And I got to tell you, the biggest thing I took away from Sean O'Malley's win was that I think a fight with Merab is really interesting now. I didn't think so, like, heading into this year. Like, heading into the year and heading into this fight, I'm like, all right, well, he's going to go beat Cheeto, and then he's going to lose to Merab. Like, the Merab fight's not going to be close. I think it's a close fight. I think it's a close fight. I think it's very competitive. And Sean can beat Merab Dawalis, really. So I hope that's the fight that we get. That's the fight we should get. And that's all I really have to say about that. I'm sure you guys will chime in as well. Other great performances from 299 as well. We've had some announcements. We've had a lot of time to digest the Jake Paul, Mike Tyson news. We didn't really talk about it here. Talked about it a little bit on Saturday. Talked about it a little bit on the watch party Friday for the Joshua Ngannou card. Had Mike Perry on that on the show to talk about that as well. So we can talk about whatever you want, guys. I'm ready to turn it on over to you. And we will begin with Tyson. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Mike. How you doing this morning?
Good. How are you?
Good, man. Good. This is the second week in a row my work schedule allowed me to call in. This is crazy. But I got three quick questions for you. My first two are related to 299, the prelims, actually. So Curtis Blaydes and Jelton Almeida. First question is, how likely is it that Curtis Blaydes would get that Tom Aspinall fight? You know, for a long, I really like Curtis Blaydes. I'm not a huge fan, but I really like the guy. For a while now, I've kind of compared him to like Bilal Muhammad. Like, title shots are just hard to come by for these guys, you know, especially when Francis was heavyweight champ. You know, Curtis had the two L's against him, you know, him holding that belt. Curtis was never going to get that third fight. And, you know, when Francis vacated, I was kind of happy for Blaydes. And then John won the belt and that fight's not. Wasn't going to happen. So that's the first question. The second question is going to be Jelton Almeida. With him losing, I know we kind of played around with the idea of him headlining that Brazil card. Just kind of what are your thoughts on that? What's next for Almeida? And then the third question is, what's your reaction to the fight being announced, the boxing match between Nate Diaz and Jorge Masvidal? All right, that's all I got for you. So Curtis and Jelton, and then Masvidal Diaz. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, sir. I kind of feel like Curtis has I think Curtis probably has the best chance of getting a title fight now than he's ever had. Because he's been in positions where you could look at Curtis and be like, dude, what else does this guy have to do? Give him a title shot. But, you know, as you mentioned, either Stipe has the belt or and he's got DC waiting, or DC has the belt and he's got somebody else waiting, or Francis, who obliterated him twice, and there wasn't really a lot of interest in that fight. Right now, it seems like Tom is interested in that fight. Curtis obviously wants it. I think there's a mutual respect between the two guys. The only other guy I think that could be in play is Ciryl Gane, but honestly, I'd rather see Curtis get the fight. I'd rather see Curtis get the fight. Curtis has done everything correctly. He took this fight. He got injured, couldn't take it. They rebook it for a pay-per-view, gets in a big spot. A lot of people were doubting him. I thought Jelton was going to submit him in the first round. He survives it, made adjustments, had a pretty good game plan, lands a big shot, and then just obliterated Jelton Almeida. Calls out Aspinall. I think it makes all the sense in the world. Now, timing is going to be everything here. When does the UFC want Tom Aspinall to fight? The UFC is going to Manchester in July. That's where all the rumor and innuendo is right now. It is not going to be a pay-per-view. It is going to be a fight night card unless they change something dramatically. If the UFC is willing to do a title fight. It is an interim belt. If they're willing to do an interim title fight in the main event of that card, then I think it's a no-brainer. I think it is an absolute no-brainer. You do Tom Aspinall, you do against Curtis Blaydes, back in the UK, same region of the world where the first fight took place, and we'll see who the real man is. And I think that'd be a great main event. So I think Curtis has a real good chance if it happens on that card. If it doesn't happen on that card, it's definitely not going to happen at 301 because it makes no sense. So I think there's a good chance. I think there's a good chance it happens. And I also think Ciryl Gane shot himself in the foot with everything he did after that win against Sergey Spivak. No call out. I'm getting the title fight. It's mine. All that. I shouldn't have to fight this guy or this guy. He just handled this poorly, and I think he's going to have to take another fight before that. So maybe they do Ciryl Gane versus Sergey Pavlovich or somebody like that to see if he gets that. But I think Blaydes is in a really good place right now. I think that performance put it in a good spot, and them going to the UK, Manchester, I think it puts him in a good spot. Almeida, man, I don't know. I mean, he could stick around at heavyweight and kind of just hope that Curtis doesn't win the belt. Because they ain't running that one back if Curtis wins the belt. But, I mean, who do you throw him in there with? There's also the option of, does he just drop back to 205? Because I think he's a freaking problem in that weight class. I think the path to the title is way shorter at 205 for him. But, I mean, he put out a bunch of size. He's filling into the heavyweight frame. He was 240 pounds heading into this one. So it's tough to say, man. It's tough to say. I'd give him if the UFC and Jailton are invested in his heavyweight future, then I'd probably throw him in there with like a Sergey Spivak or something. Just let him get a win and go from there. But I really don't know what he's gonna do. Is he gonna go back down? Is he gonna stay? I don't know. The Diaz Masvidal fight, it's fine. Look, I have questions. The date is very strange to me because there's a lot going on that day, and they seem very confident that it's not going to matter. I think it's going to matter a lot depending on the timing of this card and depending on what UFC 302 looks like, because at all indications as of right now, June 1st is going to be UFC 302, which is going to be in Newark. And unless they start this Diaz Masvidal card like super early and the main event walks happen at like 9 p.m. Eastern, ain't nobody watching it. No one's paying $80 for it. That's for sure. The date is super confusing to me. I was thrown off by the date. I knew the fight was happening. I've been telling you guys for a month and a half that fight was going to happen. It was just a matter of crossing the T's and dotting the I's. The initial report came out that it was going to happen in March. I told you that probably wasn't going to happen. I knew about who was promoting it. The same ones who promoted the Floyd Mayweather-Logan Paul fight. I knew that was in play. I knew that GameBred and Real Fight were obviously going to be a co-promotional part of the deal. So I knew all of these things. I also knew that the initial spot for this was going to be Las Vegas. They were thinking about Vegas, trying to make it happen. They wanted to put something together like kind of quickly. Didn't really pan out that way. So I think LA is actually a really good spot for it. I think everything about it is great. I think it's going to do good numbers, and I think people are going to care. The problem is, and when I mean good numbers, I don't mean like pay-per-view buys. I think people are going to go and buy tickets, and I think they're going to draw an audience. Pay-per-view buys, I'm just not sure. I'm just not sure. Depends what like 302 looks like. Now, if we get like, if 302 is, because like the last time the UFC was in Newark, that card was not good. It was the Aljamain Sterling, Henry Cejudo card. We lost Charles Oliveira, Beneil Dariush. We ended up getting Gilbert Burns versus Bilal Muhammad, a fight that you already know how I feel about that matchmaking. It was horrendous. It was dumb and it made no sense. Just throwing that card willy-nilly on less than 2 weeks notice. It didn't sell a single pay-per-view, didn't sell an extra ticket. It did nothing but put Bilal Muhammad on the shelf, wondering and waiting if he's actually going to get this title shot that he was promised and still hasn't gotten it yet. So if the car, if 302 is just a throwaway, then I think it's going to do okay. But you get the that'd be a fight on there as well. Like, it's just a tough date, man. It's just a tough date. So that is my biggest pause of all of this, because I knew the fight was happening. It was just a matter of when and where. But man, June 1st is a tough date. It's a tough date. Any other week, I think they would have been fine. But we'll see. We shall see how it all plays out. Fight's fine again, but man, I don't know.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Cult Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art, Beats, and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari, W., and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Let's go to CB. What's up, CB?
Hey, Mike, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hey, heck of a morning. Just want more of your thoughts on the Poirier versus BSD fight, man. That fight was ridiculous. It felt like a horror movie. You know, you got BSD just stalking down Poirier. And I felt like we all kind of knew that Poirier was going to win just because, you know, he's been through so many wars throughout the years. But I think BSD is going to get better from this. And yeah, and Poirier is still the man. Just want more of your thoughts on that. Thanks.
Yeah, it was... The fight was everything I knew it was going to be. BSD, like, looked real good for a while. Poirier is just a friggin' dog. And I was on Poirier from minute one. If you go back and listen to the reaction, I picked Dustin Poirier. I said my pick is going to be him. Experience matters in a number of ways. Especially in a five-round fight. You put Dustin Poirier against any of these young guys, I'm going to pick Dustin Poirier against pretty much all of them because he's just been there so many times. And you're right. BSD is going to bounce back. But it was just – you could see BSD start to kind of get tired. I know he talked about, you know, being dehydrated, talked about having an infection, I think. I don't speak French, and I know you can go to like Google Translate, but that doesn't always tell the whole story. So I don't know exactly what he was trying to say. But I think that, you know, people saw the potential staph infection on his forehead. People were talking about that, but I'm not taking anything away from Dustin at all, because I still think that fight goes the same way. I think BSD tries to go out and clobber Poirier. Poirier weathers the storm, and then Poirier gets him out of there. I think my actual – let me see what my actual pick was, like, on our staff picks. I think I had Poirier KO round three, but let me just make sure. What did I have? No, I had Poirier KO round four. Yeah. It was a great fight. BSD will be better. Poirier is, like, the people's champ right now. Everybody loves him, and he deserves it. So many people were counting him out heading into this fight. And now he's probably going to get a freaking title shot. So good on him, man. Good on Dustin Poirier. One of just the not just good guys in the sport, one of the great guys in the sport. Great character, great person, tremendous fighter. And after listening to a portion of the ranking show on my way to and from the gym this morning, there's a really legitimate conversation right now about where Dustin Poirier ranks all time at 155 pounds. And he is undoubtedly top 10 at 155 ever. Like, if he's not in your top 10 list, you probably are doing something wrong. You can make a compelling case right this second that he is top five ever at 155 pounds. Just look at this man's resume. Look at the guys he's beaten. Just look what he's done over the years. He's beat them all. He didn't beat Khabib. He didn't get the undisputed title, but he's beat everybody. He's beat everybody. And now he gets a chance to fight Islam Makhachev. I'll tell you what, man. Dustin Poirier goes out there, beats Islam Makhachev. He is, stamp it, exclamation point, the second best 155er of all time. And he will end his career that way. He will go in history that way. I don't think anybody will touch him at that point. It's this performance made me reflect a lot more on what this man has accomplished. And I highly recommend that if you guys are bored, or if you have like a sick day, or if you have extra time on your hands and you just want to lay around and do something and watch fights, just take the Dustin Poirier rabbit hole. Just take a trip and go through his last, excuse me, go through from when he lost to Conor McGregor when he was a featherweight to his move to lightweight all the way through BSD. And you will not be sorry. You will get such an appreciation for this man, especially for the newer fans. Like, if you just started watching Dustin Poirier when you got the two Conor fights down the stretch, like, you've missed out on so much. You really have. So highly recommend it. This guy is a legend, all-timer, and this performance just puts it over the top. You don't see a lot of guys in his position not only fight backwards, because, you know, kudos to Justin Gaethje, he did the same thing. Justin Gaethje went back and fought Rafael Fiziev, got a win. It was a great fight. Poirier went way back against a guy like no one wanted to fight. It was like, yeah, dude, I'll bet. I'll fight him. And yes, he played it smart, did the public negotiation with the UFC, and probably got himself an extra bag. And the guy just, he's just so good at this. So kudos to Dustin Poirier. He friggin' rules. Let's go to 4-Out Sniper.
Yo, can you hear me, Mike?
Yes, sir.
Hey, heck of a morning. Glad to have you back on this heck of a morning. I also wanted to pile on to the Dustin Poirier love. I could not believe my eyes when I first saw the betting line. It made no sense in my head. I mean, I just didn't get it. I was mind blown. I think he was a plus, what, almost 180 or something like that. And this betting line was the same as when Benoit fought Matt Frivola. And clearly, Dustin Poirier and Frivola, much different fighters, much different skill levels. So I was so happy when I saw Dustin go out there and get the knockout win. Benoit will be back. He's a great fighter. He just needs to tighten up on a few things from what I saw. But as far as that, that's it. I also wanted to ask you, do you think the UFC would be doing themselves a disservice if they didn't do Wonderboy and MVP? That seems like the fight everybody's asking for. And that seems like the next move for MVP. So just wanted your thoughts on that.
Agree with everything you said about Dustin. Agree with everything you said about Benoit Saint-Denis. Benoit Saint-Denis needs to learn some defense. And that was like another big point in this fight, is that poor BSD is a grizzly bear. He's just going to keep coming. But he's also just going to run through a whole bunch of damage. He's got very little defense. He's just full speed, all gas, no brakes. And you're going to beat a lot of guys fighting that way. You're going to overwhelm a lot of people. You're just not going to overwhelm the top of the best division in the sport. It's not going to happen. You're not going to do it against guys who have fought other guys many, many times who have done the same thing. You're just not going to be able to do it. He's got to shore up his striking defense. He's got to learn how to conserve his energy a little bit more. Yes, he is exciting. Yes, he is must-watch TV. But if he wants to be a top 5 55er, if he wants to be a guy who fights for a world title someday, he's got to shore that stuff up. I got Dustin Poirier at plus 170. I was a little regretful because I could have got him a little bit higher, but, you know, what's 10 points? Who cares? But I got him at plus 170. I was thrilled with that. I was just happy that we hit the over 1.5 so we could cash that big parlay at the end of the night. I had a really good I had a really good betting night on Saturday. I was very happy. The only bet I lost was I lost Gilbert Burns, but it wasn't like a bad bet in hindsight. It was actually a great ticket to hold until it wasn't. And I lost Marlon Vera plus 5.5 points because that fight was not close. But those are sprinkle bets. All the bets that I was confident in that I placed some good money on all hit. My biggest bet was Burns JDM over 2.5. Boom. Nailed that. MVP dog bet. Nailed that. Dustin Poirier dog bet. Nailed that. Hit both my parlays. It was a good night. It was a good night. Now, MVP. I don't think this fight's happening, guys. Like, I know a lot of people want to see it. I mean, maybe the UFC, like, kind of forces it, but Wonderboy was asked about this as soon as MVP was a free agent. And what did he say? Nah, man, we train together. We're buds. Like, it's not happening. And then even MVP was like, he didn't say exactly the same thing, but he was just like, he basically is saying what I've been saying, what most other people who have watched these two guys fight have been saying. That is gonna be an awful fight. Like, it's gonna be bad. It's gonna be bad. There's gonna be like 15 strikes thrown in that whole fight. That ain't gonna be fun. It's basically like Wonder Boy fighting himself, but just like a sleeker, a little bit younger, slightly more athletic version. I don't think it's like all you, like, honestly, this would be the UFC's version of MVP Paul Daly, where like you want it so bad and it gets built up and then you get it and you're just like, ugh, that's it? That was what we like built all this up for? I don't think it's that good of a fight. I really don't. I would rather see MVP fight. So on to the next one. Vicente Luque is fighting Joaquin Buckley March 30th. I think Vicente Luque is going to win that fight. And even if he doesn't, whoever wins that fight versus MVP is fun because both those guys are going to go right at him. And we're going to see MVP do the thing. And if it's Vicente Luque, especially like this version of Vicente Luque, he's going to mix in some takedowns. Like, we're going to really get to see how good MVP is in that fight. So Luque is a great pick. I wouldn't be shocked if they bump him up even higher. I think they're going to kind of, I'm not going to say they're going to fast track him to a title fight, but as I was saying heading in, if he went out there and just obliterated Kevin Holland, like, there is a real world where he would have jumped over everybody. So I think they're going to be very cautious. I think the matchmakers kind of see what MVP Wonderboy would look like. And even MVP sees it. Even MVP himself sees it. Guys, it's not going to be fun. And he's right. It's not going to be fun. And plus, they do have a relationship. I just don't think this is the fight we're going to get. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I don't think we're going to see it. And I think we're better off for it. I promise you. I think we're better off for it. Let's go to Ethan. Yes, sir.
For you, one about MVP. I was super impressed with his performance against Holland. I thought he looked awesome. I was just curious, what did you think about his planned walkout that he told us about on the MMA Hour? Would you have been into that idea? And then another one I had that kind of popped into my head watching all the highlights of Dustin's career, watching the Conor knockout over and over again. What do you think are some moments that took place during the COVID era that should have been in front of a full arena? Because I think like Dustin Poirier knocking out Conor would have been insane in an arena. So just want your thoughts on that. Thanks so much and have a great day.
Yeah, God, there's a bunch of them. There's a bunch of them. I mean, Francis knocking out Stipe is probably right up there. Justin Gaethje, Tony Ferguson would have been right up there. I mean, just, man, 249 in general. Calvin Kattar, like, thumping Jeremy Stephens with that elbow. Imagine that in front of a live crowd. Like, the golly. He would have been so over there. There's a bunch, man. Was Holloway Kattar in front of a crowd? I don't think so. That'd have been a fun one in front of a crowd. Yeah, there's a bunch. It's a great question. It's a great question. MVP looked good. It was a good performance. I mean, again, I had a dog bet on MVP. Didn't feel great about it, but I felt pretty good about it. Because here's another thing when it comes to Wonder Boy. Wonder Boy and MVP fight so similar that when they end up fighting like shared opponents, the fights are going to look very similar. Like, we saw Kevin Holland fight Wonder Boy, and he got run in that fight. I know he hurt himself, but I don't think that would have changed a thing if he didn't break his hand. Like, Wonder Boy just figured him out real quick, pieced him up, and just beat the hell out of Kevin Holland. Like, to the point where his corner was like, all right, dude, enough is enough. This is just getting out of hand now. And it was a pretty similar fight, except MVP actually frustrated Kevin Holland to the point where he just stopped talking. I've never seen Kevin Holland so frazzled before. And you saw it right after the first round. He goes back to the corner. His corner's trying to tell him stuff. He's like, do you hear what I'm saying, Kevin? He goes, yeah, he's just way faster than I thought he was. And that was the story. Kevin Holland is tough as shit, man. That guy is tough, because MVP was clipping him with some big shots in that fight and was able to come through and went to a decision. So, yeah, good, solid outing. It was a good debut. As far as the entrance goes, yeah, I would have loved to have seen it. I'd love to see all the fighters get the chance to have some fun entrances. Like, the UFC just needs to open things up and have a little bit more fun. But Dana was asked about the press conference. Do you want to see more dancing and like cool entrances? He's just like, no, I don't want to see it. I think we need to see more of it. It's fun. Let these fighters express themselves a little bit more. But it's just not going to happen, unfortunately. Once in a while, we'll get it, but that ain't going to be our world. It's unfortunate. At least MVP got something.
This week on The Pitch, would you like fries with that?
People are what make franchises run. The person who knows the business inside and out.
Yep.
Not someone who came off Wall Street because their check clears. Franchairs is the first investment marketplace where people can invest in franchises.
So you said $800 billion is what this market is a year. And hundreds of businesses are actually franchised businesses.
Oh, thousands.
Thousands and thousands.
There are more brands franchised than there are stocks on the NASDAQ.
Oh.
You're raising a $4 million price round.
And what are the terms on that?
The $19 million post-money valuation.
Yeah. And do you not think that the valuation is a little frothy?
This week, things get frothy when Kenny Rose brings a new alternative investment class to retail investors. Go right now and subscribe to The Pitch wherever you listen to podcasts.
Trevor, go ahead, man.
What's happening, Mike? How are you? Hope everything's good. $299, what a card. First and foremost, I can't remember the Cuban's name from the undercard. I don't even want to pretend to know how to pronounce it. But how far do you think he can go being 35 years old, just now getting into the UFC? I know he's got devastating power. But how far do you think he could go? And my second question is, do you think $79.99 will be a fair price for the Jorge Masvidal versus Nate Diaz boxing match? I know it's got a little bit of a lower price right now on the promo. But do you think this is actually going to do well on pay-per-view? Appreciate you. Have a good Thursday.
Thanks, man. You're speaking of Rubellis de Spain, who, shout out to John Anik for letting us know that Rubellis, when he had his fighter meeting, wanted to Americanize the name a little bit. So Rubellis de Spain is what he's going to go with as far as the broadcast and everything. Yeah, man, I told you all, watch out for this cat. On the People's Pre-Fight Show, I sung his praises. I put him over. This dude he has the death touch. I mean, we talk about fighters with power in the heavyweight division and all these other divisions. But, man, all this guy has to do is touch you once and you're done. It's crazy. Adrian Yanez jumped on the Joshua Ngannou watch party with us. And we were talking about 299. And he watched Rubellis like cage side for his last three fights at Fury FC because he was cornering other guys and was just telling us about the death touch this guy has. And a lot of people are kind of like dumping on his record, be like, oh, he fought a bunch of 0-0, 1-0 guys. But the guy he beat, the viral knockout that he had in like 4 seconds that basically punched his ticket to the UFC, is a guy that most people who are fans of regional MMA down south, especially in Texas, the guy he beat was like, all right, if either of these two guys are going to the UFC, it's going to be the guy that Rebellis beat. And then Rebellis touched him once and finished him in 4 seconds. His three previous fights were 19 seconds total. And then he goes out and beats a UFC guy in 18 seconds in his debut. Now, shout out to Josh Parisian for just trying to get or get got, trying to get shot out of a cannon, which you knew 1 second in the fight, you knew how this was going to play out. Kind of slipped into it, left his chin wide open. He got clipped. Rebellis run, just takes a step backwards and just drops him and finishes him. Like, it was ridiculous. Dude is ridiculous. His ceiling, how high can he go? Tough to say. But I kind of think like the UFC saw the buzz he got. I think they're going to try to give him a little bit of a boost. And let's be honest, guys. Heavyweight is not a good division right now. They need life. They need some people. So who do we chuck him in there with? Jen said Chris Barnett, and I was like, no, 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 no. How dare you? That's ridiculous. Don't do it. But at this point, we don't need to rush him too quickly. Like, I know he's 35, but in heavyweight years, he might as well be like 27. Let's throw him in there. I said Austin Lane. Let's just put him in there with Austin Lane. A little Florida on Florida crime. Let's get after it. And Rebellis is Cuban. Does have some like ties to Miami. Austin's obviously from Jacksonville. Those two are just going to stand there and chuck them at each other until somebody falls. I think that's a fun one. And then if he goes out and wins that, then go from there. Just give him some more strikers. Then we can start looking at the Toffas and guys of that nature. And eventually we could test him from there. But right now, let's just have some fun with the guy and see what he can do. Let's just get him out there and get some highlight reels and build him up and see if the fans can get behind him. There's no need to rush this guy. He's only 5-0. Yes, he's got combat experience with the Taekwondo background. From what I understand, members of his team have been telling me like, yeah, man, this guy's pretty good on the ground too. Hopefully we don't have to see that anytime soon, but there are people who train with him and have seen him in the gym who say like, yeah, his ground game's pretty good too. And if that's really the case, then he's gonna be a problem. So, yeah. I know he called to be on 300. Dude, if they just threw him and Austin Lane on 300 just for shits and gigs, like, I ain't complaining about that. Fight's gonna last 18 seconds. So I'm in for that. The $79.99 price tag for Paul Diaz. We talked about this a little bit. Or not Paul Diaz. Masvidal Diaz. Look, I don't hate it. The problem is, it's the date. The date is it's just a bad date. June 1st is tough because you get the Betabita fight. On top of that, that is expected to be UFC 302. And if that card is any good, like if we get Islam Makhachev versus Dustin Poirier in the main event for that card, because I know Islam wants to fight in June, if they throw Islam Poirier on that card, Masvidal Diaz ain't going to sell very much. It's not going to sell anything. It's just not. It's going to do tremendous traffic for us because no one's going to buy it. But the best they could hope for is that, and I don't want this to sound wrong or sound like bad, but it's just the nature of the business and the beast. Islam versus Poirier is like a 700,000 buy pay-per-view because of Poirier being a star. Islam is a star as well. You get two stars fighting each other, and the storyline behind Poirier fighting for the belt for the final time is, it's just, it'd be, what an incredible story it would be. So that's going to do tremendous on pay-per-view. They need to hope that, and I know Leon Edwards is emerging as a star. He's a star in the UK. But they need to hope that Leon Edwards versus Bilal Muhammad is the main event for UFC 302. Even then, I still think the UFC is going to like clobber them in buys, but at least they'll get something. At least they'll get something. There are a lot of like casual, not like hardcore level MMA fans who would rather pay $80 to watch Masvidal and Diaz fight than watch Bilal Muhammad fight for a title. It's just the way that it is. So I guess that's like their best hope right now. But if Islam Poirier headlines that card, they're toast. They're toast. And the price tag, like, we'll see what the rest of the card looks like. We'll see what other names are on there. I don't think it's going to be that fight and then just a bunch of no names. I would expect, you know, Chris Avila to be on that card. I would expect some names. Honestly, I would expect some names. Maybe we get like an Anthony Pettis or something. I think you're going to get a bunch of names on there. But we have to see how the rest of it shapes out. But yeah, the date is a concern for me. Four Corner Sports.
Hey, so I wanted to get your opinions on the Gilbert Burns fight. I know Gilbert Burns, I think last time I checked, it was he had like maybe like a minute and 40 seconds because he was winning the fight. I had him up two rounds to none on JDM, and the whereabouts on JDM was really good. So like it was like all or nothing at that point. I'm very interested, like, where does Gilbert Burns career goes from here? Is he kind of solidified as that top five gatekeeper? And for this weekend, what are the stakes really for the main event? I mean, I know it's a fun fight because Ty's on the card. I think this fight was originally supposed to be on 298, and I just feel like there's not many storylines or much at stake on this weekend's card. I think so.
Thanks, man. Let me pull up this weekend's card. Where Gilbert Burns goes, yeah, I guess. Like, he's probably a top 10 litmus test now. I think that's kind of where he goes. I think Gilbert Burns versus, man, I don't even know, like, who he would fight. Who would he fight? I mean, him and Jeff Neal makes a lot of sense. Like, two guys on back-to-back losses. One decision, one finish. I'm okay with that. That's kind of where he is. He's just kind of in, like, vet fights or, you know, litmus test fights. You know, I think, like, if, you know, a guy like Michael Morales keeps going out there and getting big wins, like, that's a guy who could get in there with Burns at some point. Like, not now. I mean, you got to, for Morales, like, he just beat Jake Matthews. Like, you throw Morales in there with, like, a Neil Magny next. And then if he beats a Neil Magny, then we start looking at, like, a Gilbert Burns type. But welterweight's just such a strange division now. We need to get some movement in there. We need to get Leon fighting somebody. Shavkat's there, waiting and ready. Bilal is there. Should get the next shot, but Shavkat is, to me and a lot of other people, like the uncrowned champion. He just needs his chance. JDM's coming up. Ian Gary's coming up. Sean Brady's coming up. Now we got MVP in there. Morales. You know, Nicholas Dalby's looked real good. Randy Brown has found something. Joaquin Buckley's looked real good. Like, we got guys coming right now. So I think that the youth movement is starting to come along. So it'll be interesting to see where Gilbert goes from here. As far as, I mean, there's like no stakes in the main event. I think like everything's on, it's just kind of everything on Tai Tuivasa right now. I think all the stakes are with him. I think he needs to win this one. Like, losing four in a row is tough, man. I know he went through three in a row and then went on that run and almost got to a title fight. But I mean, of all the losses he's had during this run, I mean, and no disrespect to Marcin Tybura, this would be the worst loss of his career. This would be the one where it's just like, man. And Marcin Tybura is like not a horrific loss, but it would be the worst. Look at his losses. JDS in 2018. Blagoy Ivanov, which in 2019, like, Blagoy was looking real good. Sergey Spivak did not age great. And then he beats Stefan Struve. He beats Harry Hunsucker. He beats Greg Hardy. Beats Augusto Sakai. Knocks out Derek Lewis. And then his losses are to Cyril Gane, Sergey Pavlovich, and Alexander Volkov. Losing to Tybura is tough. Like, that's tough. So I think all the stakes are on his end. And it's mostly like, if this guy wants to be relevant in the division again, I mean, I'm not saying he's irrelevant because the fans love him, but 4 in a row is a tough place to be. So hopefully he can go in there. I think there's a very good chance he can get Tybura out of there real quick. But if this fight gets extended, if we start sniffing like 7 minutes, boy, it could get tough. Marcin just kind of sitting on him for a while. And then the rest of the card. No. There's like no stakes here. Yeah, there's like none. I mean, I you could make a case that the only fight that has like high level divisional relevancy and not even like at a big peak are the two women's bantamweight fights. Khanzad Chiasson, Josiane Nunes, and Chelsea Chandler. I think they're the only ranked fighters on the card outside of the heavyweights. I think this is going to be like a decent watch. Like Brian Battle, Angelosa is a co-main event. Like it's going to be a fight, like a good scrap, but co-main event? Kennedy and Chichuku fighting Ovince St. Preux? Like, what are we doing here? Christian Rodriguez, Isaac Bulgarian is going to be fun as hell. There's no stakes there, but it's going to be fun as hell. Gerald Meerschaert, Brian Barberina is going to be fun as hell. It's good to have Mike Davis back, Natan Levy. Like, there's a lot of fun fights on this card. Ode Osborne, Jafel Filho is going to be fun as hell. Josh Koulibaly, Danny Silva is going to be fun as hell. A lot of fun fights. But stakes, not a ton of them. Not a ton of them. Let's go to Abzwalia.
Hello, sir. Mark. Yes, sir. What's up, Mark? Heck of a morning. Just have a few questions I want to ask. Firstly, this Brazil card upcoming 301. Wait, let me rephrase my sentence. This upcoming 301 Brazil card that's about to happen in 2 months' time. As of now, I know we have nothing really set in stone in place, but I'm really concerned for the possible outcome of this card. I'm not expecting anything super spectacular or great, but I just really am curious, what is the UFC's direction with this whole thing? Because is this kind of like a big fuck you to Brazilian fans for the Derek Lewis Almeida card and, you know, last year's 283 card, which looking back was a pretty decent card. Despite not being the most palatable on paper. I'm just curious, like, do you think they could try and squeeze in a Jelton and Mita, you know, just some of the other Brazilian fighters who at the very least have a little bit of a name just to please their fans? Because, look, I like the Paul Craig fight with Chow, but I'm not, it's like, it's whatever. It's just another middleweight fight. I really think they can do better. You know, Pantoja headlining the card is not the most exciting, but I wouldn't mind it. I think it gives the opportunity to put, you know, possibly Muhammad Makhachev in the spotlight, or, you know, Stephen Elkhag if he gets the title shot. Another question I have is, you know, I'm sure we've been seeing about the recent discourse on Colby Covington, Ian Garry. If they do end up making that fight, when and where do you see that happening? Do you see it being a fight night headliner, or could it be a pay-per-view, you know, main card event? And just one last question. I'll make this one quick. This was about, just from the fighter's name here. This was about, just watching them right now. Just about Adesanya. I know a lot of people are talking about sort of Rodriguez. Do you think the UFC might try to just do that fight, an international fight, where if they can't do Conor, or do you reckon there's something they can do later on down the line, like November? That's all. I have a great day.
I don't know. Izzy won, not really sure. Where do I want to start? Yeah, 301 looks pretty rough. I don't understand what the UFC is doing here for a number of reasons. One, like, believe me, I love me some Arvin Sarukian versus Charles Oliveira. But, like, would it be the worst thing in the world to just push that back off of 300? Like, I don't want that to happen, but, like, would it be the worst thing just to add a little sizzle to that card? I don't think it would be. It's a little too late. Like, that was announced. Like, we kind of knew they were going to Brazil for that May 4th date. They just didn't make it official until, I think it was the day of 298. Which we knew, by the way, like, just the plans all changed with the Pereira-Jamal Hill thing. Because as I was telling you guys, like, Pereira, I kept saying, like, oh, Pereira's going to fight at 300? I'm like, nah, I don't think he's going to, because I kind of knew they were going to put him at 301 against Jamal Hill because they were going to freaking Brazil, and that made all the sense in the world. But then they rushed it to headline 300 because they needed a main event that would blow our socks off. When in reality, you could have just done Justin Gaethje versus Max Holloway as the main event, and no one would have complained. Nobody would have complained. It would have been fine. We still would have the two title fights and all the other bangers. It would have been fine if that was the main event. Or they could have just said, Connor and Chandler, go fight at 300. No one would have batted an eye at all. But the UFC's booked themselves in a corner, and instead of giving a really solid main event for 301, they gave it to 300, and now they booked themselves into a corner. I'll tell you which one was like the head shaker of head shakers. If you watch the watch party, I knew what the final UFC 300 fight was before they announced it. And I knew they were going to announce it at 299. And I was puzzled by it because I had found out and confirmed it. But basically we were told, like, guys, just, they're going to announce it tonight. So, like, there's no need to report it. And when people say that, like, we're not going to be like, nah, dude, we're going to be first. No one gives a shit anyways. Why is Renato Moicano versus Jalen Turner happening at UFC 300? Why? What is the point? Love the fight, but you're going to Brazil 3 weeks later. You have Renato Moicano, who has gotten so over. Why not just book that at 301? Why not just book that at 301? Put Rebellus to Spain at 300 against anybody. Let him light some dude up at 300. And put Moicano versus Turner at 301. What are we doing here? What are we doing? I have no idea what they're going to do now. You can't put Jailton Almeida there. He just got brutally knocked out. He can't fight there. I don't want to see that. Gets brutally knocked out by a big-ass heavyweight who hits really hard. And then have him turn around 2 months? I don't want that. We don't even know who freaking Pantoja's going to fight. Is he going to fight Makhachev? Is he going to fight Roy Val again? Like, what are we going to do? I have no idea. I mean, maybe throw Michelle Pereira on that card, but, like, who's he going to fight? I don't know. Yeah, I think it's not going to be a great card. It's not going to be a great card. I don't know what they're going to do. I think if Jailton beat Curtis, they would have probably done Aspinall. Jailton is the main event of that card, and then just throw Pantoja in with anybody. And then I thought they were just going to do Pantoja versus Manal Kopp, because Kopp would at least, like, say some pretty gnarly things to rile up the Brazilian crowd. But now Manal Kopp's booked. They're doing the Nicolau fight to main event at the world's most famous Apex April 27th. So this thing is just a mess, man. It's just a mess. I don't know what they're going to do. I honestly don't know. So we'll see. But time's running out, man. We're less than a little over 7 weeks away from 301. We have no main event. Let me see.
Let's see what 301 looks like right now.
I know we have Caio Baraglio versus Paul Craig, but Anthony Smith, Vitor Petrino, that was a nice little addition. Joaquin Silva, Jakar Close, Alessandro Costa, Kevin Borjas, Deonny Barboza versus Ernesto Caracate, Jonas Brito, Jack Shorts, good fight. Like, I mean, looking at it, it's not horrible, but we're just, this is a fight night card, like a really good one. Elvis Brenner versus Mick Tebek Oralby is awesome. That fight friggin' rules. I don't care if you co-main event with that one. That fight is frigging awesome. So that's seven fights. We got to fill this thing out and still don't have a main event. So yeah, we'll see how it plays out. I mean, it's not awful, but there's just nothing that's like, we have to buy this. We have to spend another $80 after UFC 300. And then the Ian Garry Colby stuff. Yeah, I don't know if you guys want freaking Colby. Colby goes on Twitter, breaks his silence about Ian Garry, puts out this, hey, we'll do this, but you have to do these three things. And I don't really want to go into the whole promo because it was very Colby. But I think that's the fight they make. I think that's the one that makes the most sense. I think there's some things Colby said I thought were very interesting. There's a reason why you want to fight me because I'm the biggest star in the division. But if you're Colby, what are your options right now? You could fight Shafkat, and I think he knows full well that that fight's super duper tough. Or you could fight Ian Garry, who is very good and still could be a tough matchup. But at least, like, if he fights Garry and he beats Ian Garry, he's going to get a lot of fans back that have jumped off because people just don't like Ian Garry, and I think it's a little ridiculous. I mean, you could just like or dislike people, but there's this outright hatred for Ian Garry amongst the people, and the reasoning behind it is a little silly and ridiculous. But I think that's like the best he could do right now because he's nowhere near a title shot at this point. And I think like the best fight he could get with the most momentum and the most attention he can get right now is probably Garry. And it's a fight he can win. It's a winnable fight against an over guy in the division. I think it's a no-brainer for Colby. And I think that's the fight that does happen. And I think you do it International Fight Week. I think you do it then. It's a good main card fight for International Fight Week. And usually they put Ian Garry on all these big cards anyways. Throw in International Fight Week. It's a great one. It's a great one. Especially if Connor and Chandler end up headlining. It's a damn good featured bout or co-main event. Can you even do five rounds? Who gives a shit? Do Connor in the main and Garry in the co-main? Like that's pretty damn good. So, yeah, I don't think they're gonna like fight night that one. That's a pay-per-view main card fight. Yeah, and I think International Fight Week's a perfect time for it. So, we'll see how it plays out. I think that's the fight to make. Makes the most sense. I mean, you could do like MVP and Garry, but I don't really want to watch that right now. I think Garry is just too far ahead at this point. Let's just give him the Colby fight, see how he does. If he loses, gives a shit. And if he wins, that's a huge fucking win against Colby. So I like the matchmaking there. So, all right, we are done. You guys all rule. It's good to be back. Sorry if I coughed a couple of times. If the voice is a little shoddy, but we're battling through. We will have a BTL. 12:30 p.m. Eastern. So if you're listening live, a little over an hour's time. Obviously, we have a ton of shit to talk about. It'll be myself. It'll be Jen Meshew. And it will be our old friend Shaheen Al-Shadi joining the program. Always fun. We haven't really heard from Shaheen about anything that happened this past weekend. I know he was a little under the weather as well. So we'll get his thoughts on a lot of different things. And I got to tell you, my friends, I know some of the things were teased slightly on the MMA hour yesterday. The road to UFC 300 on MMAfighting.com, tremendous website. Oh boy, is it going to be fun. It is going to be a fun time, everybody. We have a lot of cool stuff planned. And I think you kind of could get the gist of what's happening for the watch party for UFC 300 if you watched the MMA hour yesterday. I mean, it's not like officially official, but I think they kind of set the table just a little bit. I think you know what's about to happen. And if it happens, it's going to be the best. It's going to be the best. So stay tuned for all of those announcements. Stay tuned for all the fun stuff we're going to do. And stay tuned for BTL, 12:30 on the YouTube channel. We'll be back tomorrow, Free For All Friday, 10:15-ish Eastern time. We'll do it again. But until then, have a great rest of your Thursday. Have a heck of a morning, everybody.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art, Beats, and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.